Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
It has been 18 million years, but finally the good, the bad, and the hungry has returned to your ears. It's Fred. We're here with Tyler. Welcome back. We're doing a show. Nearly canceled because my wife decided to go on strike 10 minutes before record time. That was fun.
Tremendous. What are they trying to fight for?
I have already forgotten what I said. Tyler, how are you doing?
Okay, that was just a bit. I'm like, wait, your wife's going on strike? Oh,
Wi-Fi.
Oh, Wi-Fi. I heard wife.
Intertubes.
I was thinking to myself, I'm like, what are the medical workers of Kentucky trying to fight for right now? I'm interested. Let's have some labor conversations, baby. But no, I'm good. Busy as always. NFL draft is coming up. It's 4 weeks from today. Getting everything planned out and trying to figure out what I'm going to do with these damn dogs while I'm sitting in my office for 5 hours a night. But pretty good otherwise. How are you, Fred?
I'm doing great. The sun is out. It is. We're currently in probably our second fall spring here in Kentucky. So I'm looking forward to pulling out the heavy coat again in 3 days when there's like 4 inches of snow on the ground or something stupid like that. Well, you know what is doing pretty well in general is a professional wrestling company we like to talk about called All Elite Wrestling, AEW. So let's get to it. Pretty big week. We definitely are the most timely reporters when it comes to the Revolution show. So let's hit some news first. I think the biggest story of the past week or so is that Toni Storm is apparently going to be gone for the rest of the year for a non-injury issue. It has not been clarified exactly what that is. I think there are guesses that are pretty easy to make, but I don't know if those are right. It is unusual, I think, in a sense, in that even during her Revolution match with Marina Shafir, they were hyping a match she was going to have on Dynamite as a street fight, which I think they just slid Yuna Shirakawa into in her
place.
They
did.
They were hyping that during the match. There was no sign that even that the post-match Ronda Rousey run-in, a surprise, and subsequent Marina Shafir laying out Toni Storm, it did not come off as like an injury angle or anything. I got no vibes off of that it felt more like they were setting up a program with Ronda Rousey and Toni Storm rather than any kind of injury angle. And so I just feels very unusual. I assume something was learned or figured out or whatever decided between Sunday and Wednesday. Just a little bit off kilter, Tyler.
Yeah. A lot of people speculating about why Toni Storm is all of a sudden out, because it did feel very, very abrupt. And one of the reasons people are kind of talking about the abruptness is maybe that Toni Storm is pregnant with Juice Jr. Obviously, that's not necessarily something that we want to contribute to the discussion. Obviously, being that Toni Storm is of the female persuasion, that it's always a possibility, but it was a little ominous how it was just like Toni Storm will not be wrestling the rest of the year. No real context as to that. And I read that as it's a personal thing, whether that being she's pregnant or whatnot. The only thing I'll say is, one, it kind of stinks that she's gone because she is incredibly engaging and entertaining to watch. Two, I think it'll actually be good for her to be off TV for a little while because she's been such a featured part of AEW television for the better part of the last 2-3 years. And it'll open up more opportunities for other women in this company to rise up to the occasion and get Will a bigger
push. Will and Nightingale, Will and Nightingale, Will and Nightingale, Will and Nightingale.
We've been beating that.
Maybe we can finally pull the trigger on that. Anyways.
I think we're actually going to see a Mercedes Moné world title win by the end of the year because she's dropping all the belts everywhere else. I would maybe save it for like Double or Nothing 27 because, hey, she's on this downward spiral right now. She's already had two failed attempts to win the belt, one against Toni Storm, obviously. The other, I believe, was Statlander. It's smart to keep her on that downward spiral and make that come up that much stronger. And
I mean, you could do that in 3 or 6 months instead, but yeah, I agree with you in general.
But she does seem to have limited television dates. I know, I think it was reported her contract expires like at the end of the year in like September or something, which would complicate things a little bit as far as overall push. Because if you want to make this I think you could do like a Tetsuya Naito Tokyo Dome win kind of thing where she had the two losses. And then it takes her like a year and a half, 2 years to really build her back up. Because not only is she on this kind of downward spiral, she's losing all these titles. Now she has to regroup and figure out life. What is she going to do? How is she going to build herself back up? And I think what you could do is elevate other women. I think the fact that you have the tag titles now on Megan Bain and Lina Cross, that look of the tag team is one of my favorite tag team looks of all time. They look menacing. They look cool physically look. Imposing. I'm not going to say it's like Legion of Doom, Road Warriors kind of stuff, but it's that on a lesser scale. They look like they're going to kill you. And I think that's a phenomenal look for a tag team. And it's great to see like more women featured in bigger spots. I'm very high on Megan Bain. I don't know crap about Lina Cross, but I've been very impressed so far. I don't know what her ceiling is. And I think pushing her with Bain and making these tag titles feel pretty important because of now who has them and how they're being presented is awesome. It opens up other opportunities, not having Toni Storm in the picture. And then when she comes back, guess who's going to get one of the biggest pops in company history? Toni Storm.
Yeah, definitely.
So this could end up being a happy accident where maybe you didn't expect Storm to be out for a long time and now she is. And then you can pivot some of your booking. I think Tech was doing a phenomenal job as world champion right now. And I would keep the belt on her for a while because she's everything that's right about pro wrestling. She didn't grow up watching WWE and all these canned ass promos. Everything's just authentic. It's natural. It's, for lack of a better term, grimy and like rough around the edges. It just feels like a real person, even though she's in character, talking and getting passionate about it. Like, these promos are great. And it's so different from anything else we have on AEW. And the in-ring work is pretty good. I understand why the Stardom fans didn't want to keep her around, but it's the women's division to me right now is actually really good.
Yeah, I think it's in a good place right now. I am concerned about Tony's absence just because she is, I think, the biggest star, even though I think she's cooled a little bit from her peak about 9 months ago. But I think she's still definitely one of the biggest stars on the roster, period, and the biggest star on the women's side. You could argue Mercedes, I reckon, but Tony's around more often, so I'll give her the edge, in my mind. So I think that's always a problem, and it's great to talk about, like, oh, well, you can build someone else up, which is true, but Tony Khan, to be clear, doesn't always do that. Sometimes it's just like, I could, but why? Which is kind of frustrating, and I'm there's always a concern that that's going to be the case, but I'm excited to see what they do in the absence of her. I'm a little concerned it might be a bigger Mina Shirakawa match push, just because.
Please no. I think that ended last night.
I am hopeful.
Look, fine. I'm going to say this.
It was all right.
She over-delivered. I thought the match was going to be a squash.
It was a nice 3-star effort. I can't complain about it, but in general, she's not great in the ring by any stretch.
I mean, she's very charismatic and engaging, but you're right. The rest
she's okay in like the mid card of the women's division, I reckon, but like I don't need her pushed as a major star. All right, so let's move on down the list. So we already mentioned the Ronda Rousey thing. Pretty weird. I guess it's just she's anti WWE/TKO, which I mean, more power to her. Is happy to just occasionally show up on AEW when it's convenient to her, like once a year, or when she feels like having fun in a Ring of Honor tag match with Little Build. The way they did it on Saturday night, I actually thought it was going to be like a thing with her, you know, like a major storyline, her coming in, going for world title. Either I completely misread it, but I don't feel like I was on an island here. So interesting to see. We'll see if she returns at any point in the future. She does have the MVP Promotions big fight with Cyborg, I think it is, on the Netflix show in a few months. So wouldn't expect her anytime soon. But yeah. All right. So I figure we should probably talk about the big news coming out of Revolution outside of Toni Storm's health. Presence on TV, I should say, would be Adam Page losing in the main event to MJF, and thus apparently agreeing that he would never challenge for the world championship again. Now, the thing with that is you can see the blinking signs that say we could work around this if we want to. A lesson was learned from Cody Rhodes, I think. But there, you know, in the post-show presser, Tony Khan, when asked about it, was like, oh, it was a gentleman's agreement. And that is screaming to me, if we ever decide to change our minds, especially if we turn Hangman heel, then we can do so. I don't think there's any reason to really read into this as like he's leaving AEW off of this. And I don't think there's any real reason to think that he will never be in the world title picture again.
I've already figured out how they get out of it, Fred.
How's that?
So one of the things that AEW does not want to do is completely ignore stipulations. One of the easiest things you can do when it comes to, oh, he's never going to challenge for the title again, is make the decision not his and make the decision not on the company. So the one person, when he finally ends up getting the world title, that Will Ospreay has not beaten is Hangman Page. So here's my general arc. You have Will Ospreay go on a long title run, but the one thing that can't escape him is he has never beaten Hangman Page. He lost in the Owen. Hangman is obviously the centerpiece of this company. Ospreay has already beaten MJF. He's already beaten Kenny Omega. He's already beaten Okada, albeit not in this company. I think he's already beaten Takeshita, but you might have to fact check me on that. Obviously he's already beaten Kyle Fletcher. And you can have it throughout the title reign where he just takes a bunch of other names off of his list, but he may have this long title reign, but he's never beaten the centerpiece of this promotion. And that's how you build up in about 2 to 3 years. And maybe the first title reign for Ospreay isn't the 10 pole title reign. Maybe you give him cup of coffee with it, 2-3 months, get it off of him, and then you build him back up for this mega reign. Then everybody's just talking like, well, he's never beaten Hangman Page. You can't be the best in AEW unless you've beaten Hangman Page, who has been one of the two biggest focuses of this company, sorry, three, since its inception. From day one, the biggest focuses of this company have been Hangman Page, MJF, and Jon Moxley. We can talk about the Elite all we want. No. It's those three individuals. They have always been the biggest focus of this company, even when they weren't in like the world title picture. It's always been about what their stories are. You get this babyface bravado, the same bravado that cost Will Ospreay the IWGP Junior title a few years back when he had ran through the entire junior division and he called it out at Power Struggle. And that's what prompted the return of Hiromu Takahashi. And then Takahashi beats him in the dome and wins the title in, honestly, a 5-star match. So Ospreay just continues to hear all the noise. And he's being ripped on for it on social media. He's being ripped on it by wrestlers. And it just gets to him and eats him alive that he's never beaten Hangman Page. And he challenges Hangman Page, and Hangman just blows him off. He's like, I can't challenge for this belt anyways. No, you can't have it. And that is what prompts Ospreay to offer a world title challenge. And that is how you get around it. Is that a good way to go about it? Everybody's mileage is going to vary. I think the only way you can get around it to where the company doesn't look like absurd fools for having the stipulation in the first place is babyface bravado, where they are just so dead set on having this match because they have to beat him. They have to take out Hangman Page in order for their world title reign to mean anything. That's how you build it up. And I think that's the one way where you could get this thing to work. I think, and it's obviously revisionist history, but the Elite were so scared about them being booked too strong early on, and Cody just wanted to kind of get that out there that, hey, I'm not going to be this, that, or the other thing, and end up killing him in AEW. Like, we've learned that lesson. But I think Hangman Page, if he sticks around a couple years, you get the babyface bravado from Will Ospreay. He's never beaten him. And you go around like by that route. I think that's the way to do it.
As much as I'd like to bust your balls for the long fantasy booking, this is actually a really good idea. I actually like that quite a bit. It is a very good way to lay something out that doesn't put the heat on the promotion or Adam Page. And I like it, actually. I like it better than what I assumed they would do, which is a heel turn and just be like, ah, I'm a liar, I'm a bad guy, blah, 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 you know, which I think could go poorly. I also kind of, I think a thing to discuss here is I don't know that AEW has that reputation as like the place to protect stipulations quite as much.
They haven't blown stipulations yet. That's the bigger piece of this discussion. It's not that they protected them. It's that they haven't blown them. And yeah. I do think even though they are technically the same thing, it's a perception versus reality argument.
No, right? It's all the way you do it. You're correct. Mm-hmm.
I think the only way you get around it is by Hangman saying, no, I can't challenge for this title. I won't face you. And it just eats Ospreay alive.
Yeah.
And that's how you get around it, because then Hangman's like, no, I'm abiding by this. And then eventually Hangman does something like burning down Hangman's house or some shit, you know, like just goes.
Maybe not.
I'm talking on an extreme
sure,
level.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
To bait him into this match, and it's all babyface bravado. Yeah. I think that's the only way you can get around it to where people are criticizing the promotion left and right, and it actually makes sense in canon.
That I think that's actually a very good proposal. So I like that. Yeah, but I thought it was interesting. I didn't get to watch this show for several days after it happened because of work, but I thought it was very interesting that the people who don't like MJF, and like, I'm not going to blast them because MJF can have odd ideas of how to go about things sometimes. We'll put it like that. I generally like him, but I do think he has a history of bad creative ideas. If you'd like me to discuss this further, go back to us covering the Brochachos, aka Hell. But I didn't have a big issue with the match. It wasn't, I didn't think it was like way over the top that MJF matches sometimes are. You could argue like what 40 some minutes is like excessive. I don't think that's exactly a strong chance to take 46 minutes. Good Lord. I actually thought it was a great match. I went 4.5 stars on it. It didn't have anything ridiculous like Bryce Remsburg being assassinated by a sniper mid count, or you know, just really dumb referee bumps that would feel like something out of like a bad WCW booking decision or something. So I had no big issue with it as far as like a creative idea, and I thought the work in it was very good. I don't think it was close to the best death match I've ever seen Adam Page in, or bloodbath that MJF was in. Like, it's not touching like the Swerve Strickland stuff for Page or the CM Punk dog collar match for MJF, but I thought it was an excellent match. And I don't know, I saw that initial reaction from some people, was kind of surprised by it. At least usually I can see where they're coming from, even I don't agree to the degree that they hate it. I just didn't see it this time. I don't know. Do you think I was missing something?
No, on an overall scale, I thought 4.5 was a really fair rating. I thought they got a little too perfunctory and performative at times. The glass,
a little bit.
Look, I'm not going to tell these guys what to do with their bodies or whatever, but if you're going to use glass, it has to look better than that. That glass looked like shit.
Yeah.
But I don't care if you use sugar glass. If you want to use glass and keep your body safe, fine. But when the glass looks like that, don't drag each other around in it because it looks bad. Part of the whole idea is to suspend disbelief. I wasn't believing that the glass was really hurting them.
Yeah, it was a weak spot.
It was. And
relative to what it should have been, I guess, if you're going to do that.
Look, these guys know the risks and they know what they're willing to do. They know what they're willing to put their bodies through. And I have a lot of respect for them. At the end of the day, Fred, you have to make it look good. It does not matter if it actually hurts you, if it looks bad. And that's why I don't like the 21 plex. I think 21 plex looks like shit. It's a bad.
We actually had a great 21 plex on this show, though. to toss that in real quick. That was a perfect 21 plex.
It was. But like the Soul Snatcher by Soul Ruka to me is one of the
Never
worst
looks
wrestling
good.
Moves ever. It looks terrible. It does.
It's one of those ideas, one of those moves that looks perfect in a video game. And in reality, it always looks like shit.
Yeah. And to me, it has to make sense within the context of a wrestling match. Look, we know wrestling is fake. Like it's stunted and scripted, but in the course of a fight, I can't see anybody going up to the top and trying to do a Soul Snatcher. No, just do a normal damn cutter. Like that makes some sense.
I mean, there's so many things you could say along those lines. I am currently checking if David Schultz is alive. Oh no, he is. You're in trouble, buddy. Sorry.
What'd I do?
You said wrestling was fake. He's going to come and find you. My apologies.
Look, fake is kind of a dirty word, but we know what that actually means. It's like I can buy punches, I can buy super kicks, I can buy like swanton bombs and stuff because you can be like, hey, that flip at the end, that centrifugal motion actually creates more force when you hit the other guy. Like I can buy that kind of stuff. Yeah. I can't buy the Soul Snatcher. That glass I just didn't buy. Like we can just be better.
It's always interesting to talk about what does and doesn't work in pro wrestling because it is just so, like, the whole it has to look real thing is really, it's interesting to think about it on an abstract level, and I'm trying not to steer completely into this ditch, so I'm just going to touch on it briefly. But just the idea that, like, you know, some things in this thing that everyone who watches it, basically, knows that it's all work, and has for decades and decades. What does and doesn't hit, and like how we kind of have that envelope of stuff that, you know, reasonable things fit inside, and then you get outside of it. Like most of Bandito's stuff looks very good. I think he's an excellent in-ring performer. The 21 flex on average looks like complete ass because it's just the physics don't physic, you know. And I don't know, it's just kind of interesting to consider those things. I'm beside the point. But I think in general, outside of the glass stuff, I thought this match was really what it should have been tone-wise. The work was very, very good. No surprise that MJF is, when not doing, you know, silly things, having a great match. Of course, Adam Page, also the same. So, yeah, I just thought it was a very strong main event for a show with a great show, an all-timer of a pay-per-view, I thought, with a bunch of great matches on it. I think I went 5 stars on 2 separate matches. I think the Andrade Bandito and the Moxley Takeshita, I dropped 5 stars on both of those. I thought outside of the, I didn't watch the pre-show, and I skipped the national title battle royal, which, you know, whatever. Outside of the women's tag match, which was short and to the point, like 5 minutes, you know. I thought everything on this show was, I think I went notebook on everything. Okay, I only went 3 3/4 and Tekla and Statlander. But other than that, like everything was notebook. I just thought this was a fantastic show up top to bottom.
It might have been the deepest show in AEW company history.
Which is saying something, because they've had some really deep shows before.
If the main event would have hit better, if that would have been closer to the five-star match that we thought that they had in them, we're talking this is the best show in company history. But I think that brought it down just a little bit, which really sucks, because I thought they had a lot of really good ideas throughout the match. I thought Paige bringing out the dog collar was brilliant from a psychology standpoint, because it's reminding MJF of one of his biggest failures, which was losing to Punk in that dog collar match at Revolution 2022. But there's just they tried to make it too much of an epic. And yeah. I think that really hurt.
I think it would have been better off just going 35 minutes and just being kind of violent, you know, and less, I mean, I don't feel like it's fair to call it like a community theater match by any stretch or anything, but a little less of the, like, we're telling a story kind of stuff, in my opinion. I don't want to linger too long on the pay-per-view because, like, you know, it's obviously been 11 days now and we're on top of it. Anything you want to add on it though?
Not really. I think we've fantasy booked our way out of the stipulation. I thought it was the wrong time to take the belt off MJF, but that stipulation, look, everybody was into that match. They really wanted to see that match because they wanted to know, well, it doesn't feel like the right time to take it off MJF, but Hangman's putting his basically career with the world title on the line. So what's going to happen? And now it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward.
Yeah. Well, going back to the news real quick before we get to the last two Dynamites to touch on those. Did you hear Tony Khan try to buy WWE? Did you?
You know, I wonder how serious of an offer it actually was. Like, look, $6.9 billion is very serious money. But they were $1.2 billion behind the third place bid of 8.1.
Yeah.
They were significantly behind everyone else. So I'm not saying that they weren't seriously trying, but it didn't feel like a serious offer. Plus, there's the whole 69, nice. Like, I think you could argue it was more of a meme offer, but I have never had a discussion with Tony Khan. So I genuinely don't know how serious of an offer this was. It's noteworthy that they made this offer. It's noteworthy that they tried, and I think it's not nothing. I think pro wrestling's better without a monopoly, but I would much prefer an EW monopoly than a WWE monopoly.
Yeah, my take is it was a real offer, but also like to a point, like they would seriously have bought it, but they also were kind of, I assume, we're just kind of like, yeah, you know, we know we're not really going to be able to pull this off, so shrug. It's really going to just kind of go down in history as like a footnote more than anything else, like just kind of interesting. Just I think it's going to serve like TEW scenario makers far more than anyone that actually like the actual industry. And also considering like the whole TKO/Endeavor relationship, I feel like they could have moved that decimal place back a point, and it would have really been in question if they would have still purchased it, you know. But anyways, going back down the notes, Mystico now under an AEW contract. I guess we'll see exactly what this means. I think the CMLL hardcores and the English-speaking sphere are getting a little concerned about the relationship. I can't blame them. It does keep them away from WWE, but at the same time puts them further into the scenario of Tony Khan having control over the talent. I think Hechicero was not really going to be a CMLL main eventer, so I think that's less of a concern. But if we see Mystico working a lot less dates for CMLL and that potentially affecting their business, could be a point of concern. Two returns on Revolution that I should have mentioned closer to the show, but hey, here I am. Will Ospreay has returned, as has Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, the two different levels of surprise returns, Tyler. We already see where they're going now. Ospreay is going to be set up with Moxley. We get Cope and Christian against FTR. I think one of those matches will be excellent, and the other will be potential for FTR to show just how damn good they are.
Yeah,
and that's a little dismissive of Cope and Christian. I think they can put on good work sometimes, but I also think Adam in particular is very WWE pilled. And I kind of don't like seeing his style matches.
I don't either. I want to comment quick on the Mystico comment.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I steamrolled that. I apologize.
The good part for CMLL is AEW almost never runs on Fridays.
Yeah, that's true.
And they don't run on Tuesdays. And those are their two big days of the week.
And they frequently don't tape on Saturdays. Yes. So
I actually... I don't know if we should hate it for CMLL because, like, look,
it's
I don't
a wait. It's a wait and see for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a wait and see because at the end of the day, Mystico's not going anywhere for CMLL. He may have a few less dates here and there, but he's still Mystico.
I did see a note that he was only working like twice in March or April for CMLL, which was unusual given like his Iron Man streaks the past few years.
Maybe that's intentional. He needs some rest.
Yeah, maybe he just wants some time off, which, hey, you can blame him.
Yeah. I'm glad Christian Cage is back. I don't really care about Cope. Christian Cage has become one of my favorite wrestlers.
Oh, he's great.
Ospreay being back rocks. The fact that he had a double fusion surgery and he came back in, like, what, six months?
Yeah.
Is crazy.
I'm concerned about that because of Kurt Angle.
I'm not. I know
it's not like an experimental surgery, but still, it is a fast timeline.
They showed the x-rays. They showed that
on the
return video, like, that's a legit double fusion. It depends on how serious of an injury it initially was versus, like, because, hell, maybe he could just return in 6 months. And technology has improved significantly since we saw guys like Edge miss – like a calendar year with neck fusion surgery, you know? So
yeah.
I'm not super worried about the timeline. It's different now than it used to be. These contracts are guaranteed. It's not like we're not working with WWE downsides where you got to sell a ton of merch and make every town. Like,
yeah. Well, the thing with Will is he is a workaholic. So I don't think it's so much a contractual concern as it is a, like just him wanting to be the best wrestler in the world.
And yeah, that's kind of he's also done with the Will Ospreay indie tour, you know?
Yeah. Last big news note, I think, and this is regarding last night's Dynamite, which you attended in person. Mm-hmm. Brody King did not appear on camera for that Dynamite, and I assume for the Collision as well. It's not exactly hard to speculate that they were doing it to try to prevent the Minneapolis crowd. Was it Minneapolis or St. Paul?
St. Paul. The building, Roy Wilkins Auditorium, is literally right behind Grand Casino Arena, which is where the Minnesota Wild play. And the women's hockey team, the Frost, actually had a game last night.
Nice. So I assume it was to not have the crowd chant, "Fuck ice."
it didn't stop us, baby.
It did not stop you at all. It still got on camera. I heard it during the main event. I'm not sure if there are other ones, it was definitely audible during on TV on during the Darby Roosh main event.
So some context here. One, obviously everybody knows about all the ice stuff that happened in Minneapolis. And
yeah.
I actually think the protesters, did they get nominated for like a Nobel Peace Prize or something? They got nominated for some like big time award.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And on my way down, there are like overpasses that are just like for bikes.
Mm.
and like walking paths and stuff. So there were a ton of protesters with like No Kings protesters and stuff. But it's different here than it is in other places. I think it was before the main event. I don't think it got heard on camera, but there were chants during the, I think it was the Tekla Mina Shikawa match of "We want Brody."
Yeah.
And after the camera went off, the Don Callis family came in and started beating up Darby Allin, which I don't think that got on camera.
No, actually Don Callis family, like when you definitely got to see Mark Davis deliver a beautiful sit out pile driver. That was on TV. And also that spot ruled, just pulling a sitting Darby up straight up in the air, then dropping him on his skull. Fantastic. Beautiful pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. Anyways, continue.
So once the cameras went off, you got Brody King comes out, the chants get louder. He runs everybody off, saves Darby. It worked really well. Worked really well. But yeah, it's Minneapolis. Holding him off of this Dynamite, I understand. Like from a corporate perspective, because hey, you don't want to make something like that much louder. Okay, I get it. And if it was the inverse, if it was something that was anti-Democrat and pro-Republican in the same realm, I would understand that too. Like, this isn't caping for one side of the political aisle or whatnot. This is just understanding that hey, you bring this guy out in this town and you're going to have this amplified to the nth degree. I get why they held him off. Do I agree with it? That's a different conversation entirely. But yeah, you weren't going to stop Minneapolis and St. Paul from chanting "fuck ICE." You weren't going to do it. And they were loud. And yeah, you don't mess with Minnesota. We're very nice people, but you don't mess with Minnesota.
Let's do the news quick hitters. We got ourselves Josh Alexander may have suffered a knee injury. Good Lord. On the collision taping that was held last week, that got turned into the post-March Madness collisions. No word on the severity of that injury. Hook was supposed to return on Revolution in that Blackjack Battle Royale, but was not cleared and then pulled. Layla Gray had surgery for an ACL injury. Honestly, that happened back in December. I had forgotten about it, but apparently they wanted to rest it some first. So,
that honestly probably happened because I'm guessing she might have had MCL damage, and when there's excess swelling in the knee, they don't want to perform surgery.
Yeah, Ricochet was a real dipshit and told a fan on Twitter that he was glad she had multiple sclerosis that became a mild social media. I mean, I don't want to say major, but let's say moderate social media scandal for a few days there. The solution, as always, is to throw your phone into the ocean. Everyone's phone should go right into the ocean.
I'm fine dunking on people, but there are levels to it, man.
He should have got fined and maybe a little suspension. That would have been fine,
Oh, you know what? That could have been handled privately, a fine or whatever. Look, dunk on people who are idiots. I'm all for that, but you have to understand the levels.
And he apparently apologized, which is better than nothing, but real fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Tekla got a new contract. We already talked about how she rules. She was already on her initial 2-year deal, and apparently they tore that up and said, hey, please stick around longer. We already mentioned this a little bit, but Mercedes Moné is dropping her Ultimo Moné titles all over the indies. Very professional of her to make the trips back and do that. I think that should be applauded. And a direct refutation of people when she was in the midst of picking up those belts who are like, ah, she's never going to go back and drop these. Guess you were wrong. Brian Cage, his return is imminent on the indies. Maybe we'll see the Don Callis family go back to having the Giant Guys tag team with Mark Davis that they are setting up with the former Jake something, whose name I keep forgetting.
Jake Doyle.
Jake Doyle, because I keep, my first instinct is to say Jake Hager, and I'm like, no, he's good. The AEW Unrestricted podcast has finished up after 300 and I believe it was 16 episodes. Hell yeah. They are going to launch some new kind of podcast. I think I listened to maybe 10 episodes early on in this run. It's been years since I've listened to it. I think the interview everyone associated with AEW thing is kind of hit its limit. You can look at Hey EW with RJ City also ending. So I guess maybe they're just doing a social media rebrand of some sort, coming up with new ideas, which, you know, it's good to have fresh ideas. And finally, we have three matches announced for Dynasty. We've got Jon Moxley versus Will Ospreay, Cage and Cope against FTR. Already mentioned those two. And of course, Kenny Omega challenging MJF for the World Championship. I just did my best, not quite Excalibur impersonation, but, you know, like three-quarter speed Excalibur. You're taking your time on the audiobook. Any thoughts on any of those stories, Tyler?
Good on Tekla. I think Tekla has been arguably the best signing they've made in the last calendar year. She's been phenomenal.
Very possible.
I understand why Stardom fans wanted her gone. It's, look, sometimes you just wear yourself out in a territory. Plus, she was in what? Was it Hate?
Yeah, the heel group that is inescapable.
Yeah, I get
just
it.
Like every other Japanese promotion right now.
It's their version of House of Torture. I understand. Yeah. She's made for American television wrestling, and she's unique. Rich and Joe on the flagship talk about it all the time. The best people to push are those who are underexposed on television.
Yeah, and it's, you got to get fresh blood in somehow, and I'm glad that they did with her, because she, I think she probably wasn't the best fit for Stardom because, well, I think she's a good worker. She's not a great worker. And so you can't really push her in a company that's built around like Saya Kamitani and Starlight Kid and so on and so forth.
I think she's limited stylistically and not efforts, not technical ability, but she's kind of got a little bit of that David Finley in her where I don't think you're going to see 4¾, 5-star matches, but she's always going to give you at least solid. But yeah. I think she's got a lot more personality and charisma than Finley does. And that's not a shot. It's just kind of the reality. And
yeah.
She's been an excellent addition to AEW, and I hope she stays around for quite a while. But eventually, we're just going to want her to go away because it'll just be overexposed, and we just need, as you said, fresh blood. Movement is good.
Yeah.
Personally, I think for in that realm, Chris Statlander should go away for like 3 years. Just look, you've been great. You're awesome. But I just think you've kind of run your course here, and let's get some fresh blood. Let's get you some new things to do somewhere else. And then let's reunite when that makes sense. Like Stat's awesome, but what the hell are you going to do with her? You kind of just done everything. She's kind of faced everybody too. It's, do we need to try and do more?
I don't think there's a problem with keeping some people around. I wouldn't like argue for everyone to stick around, but I think it's fine to keep some people around all the time. And I think like Statlander is good enough that I'd be okay with her being a persistent presence in the roster, but yeah, you know. All right, so last two Dynamites, they followed up Revolution with their worst Dynamite in God knows how long, and then bounced back nicely in Minneapolis. Any thoughts on those two shows, Tyler?
The Minneapolis show is a hell of a lot of fun. I think the Dynamite last week coming off of Revolution, it's just another example of AEW just not always coming out strong right after a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
It's a booking weakness of Tony Khan. He understands how to hit the high peak. He's gotten a lot better at that because he would hit the high peak like a week too soon a lot in the earlier days of the company. He's done a really good job of fixing that. Now it's about nailing the first step down off of that peak and making sure that you're not going too far down.
Yeah.
And I think he needs to work on that a little bit. That's a booking weakness of his. Look, no booker's perfect. Everybody has crutches. Everybody has weaknesses or blind spots. I think one of the biggest ones for Tony Khan is coming out of a pay-per-view because all of his stories are told or they just took this huge step in advancement. So now you have to restart some stuff and continue on. And sometimes that's just not his spot. I think they last night's show in St. Paul was not the best Dynamite in the world. but it was a very cohesive, well-structured show that advanced a lot of storylines, got some matches made for Dynasty, the pay-per-view, which is in 2.5 weeks, and overall had some good wrestling. That should have been last week's show. And I think he needs to just kind of balance that out just a little bit more. And I think once he does, you're going to see an even better television product.
I thought last night's show was like a 9 out of 10 level Dynamite. Like, I thought it was, you know, not one of the all-times, but it was tremendous in my opinion. And I was just, really good matches. I thought both Omega Swerve and Darby Roosh were like high-level notebook matches, like 4.5 stars, I think, on both is what I decided on. And you had a nice conglomeration versus the Legally Distinct for the War Dogs tag. And I actually liked the mixed six-man as well, even with, the auspicious return of Skyflight. I liked that show a lot. The previous week was not great. Honestly, here's the thing that was weird to me about that show is they had a coffin match between Darby Allin and Gabe Kidd, and it wasn't great, which is kind of astonishing. Like, you would think those two together in a beat the shit out of each other kind of scenario would deliver nicely. And instead, we got a match that is at 4.77 on Cage Match. And while I think that may be a touch harsh, in general, it was not like sniffing 4 stars by any stretch. I think I went like 3 or 3.25 on it just because they did a lot. And it was really, really weird to see them flop in that scenario.
Yeah, sometimes guys just don't have great chemistry in certain
situations.
Maybe
that's what it was.
Sometimes it's just a bad night. I really can't explain it, but I think I've said this about Hangman too. I would just go away from Darby doing coffin matches, man. I think it's kind of run its course. I think you take like 3 years off and then go back to it. You don't need to just keep doing them because Darby is just Darby and he just does them. Like, let's do something new. I called the finish to the Roosh match, Fred, because it was obvious Darby was going to win in a roll-up. He always wins in a roll-up. Let's have some other new creative ideas. Let's have some interesting new things that you can do. Well, you can't really do that with doing the same things. Like, it's one of those deals, Fred, where I don't want to see Darby do a lot of coffin matches continuously. I don't want to see him beat everybody with a roll-up. I understand part of that is the Darby character in itself, that he can take these huge beatings and he's just crafty and savvy to always win. But I knew he was going to beat Roosh with a roll-up. That's how he always wins. Let's be a little more definitive. I love Roosh. I think they should push Roosh to the moon. But they're not going to, and they've just shown that he's just a guy on the roster. So just beat him.
It's yeah, okay. If he's not, if you don't have plans with him, especially if it's not anytime soon, then you should just push the bigger star, especially because they're kind of teasing Darby as a world champion. I don't know if I had an internet hiccup here, so I don't know if any of my shit came through, but I just did want to point out like how very random that coffin match felt. Like, just like, wasn't hyped as a big deal or anything, and it felt very extraneous and weird, and then they actually delivered a not great match, and I think all around that's not great, Bob.
Yeah.
Darius Martin, man. I don't know what to make of that. We've talked about this before. Top Flight is gone from being brought in as hot prospects to being very much forgotten about. And I mean, they're still young. Darius is 26 and Dante is 25. Darius does not look like a high flyer anymore.
No.
I don't know that he particularly moves like one anymore.
He never really was that huge of a high flyer.
Not a super one, but he can at least kind of keep up with Dante. Dante was always like the super high flyer of the two. And he's still good. It just feels like the bloom is off that rose. We kind of had a little period where I felt like Dante was getting tested as the potential future star, kind of like Kevin Knight was for a while there. And they decided Dante was not Kevin Knight, which I think is correct. So I don't know what their future is going to be. I still think there's some potential with Dante, but I think sticking them with Scorpio Sky, Christopher Daniels is the guy on the outside, is dead in the water on arrival. DOA.
Send him to New Japan for Best of the Super Juniors.
Just send him to New Japan for a year.
Yeah. Just
to be like, hey, you can use this guy in your attempt to revitalize the junior department, division, I should say, and just see what you can use with them, because AEW should do more of that. I mean, I've said this multiple times on the show over the years, but like, they should just be like, all right, we've got this guy or this gal is under contract for two more years. We would like to do something with them. We don't have any immediate plans with them. We'd like to see them develop. You know, we're just going to send, I don't know, Julia Hart over to Stardom for 6 months. I'm also kind of out on Julia Hart. I know we disagree on that. I think she's got presence, but as far as entering, I just haven't seen any signs of improvement. And
she's only 24.
Sure, but you got to step up at some point, right? Like, you got to. I'm not asking for her to be Manami Toyota, you know, right now. But like, I don't know that she's good in the ring. And
I also think it's fair that she's taken a really big back seat. She's not a featured act.
No, she's not currently.
She was in the ROH taping before the show started, and she got a huge pop. She's big in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but
yeah, sure.
She's local. She grew up here. She grew up as a wrestler here, so you know that makes a ton of sense. But look, I think you still invest in her because she has the presence, and if you can just make the in-ring competent, like, you can have a star because she's got the makings of one. She got organically over being the manager for the House of Black.
Yeah.
Mega. She was big over. So
that was a success for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of variables, but she's only 24. Keep developing her and see what happens.
I'm not saying, you know, bait on her or anything. Like, I don't think you should dump her by any stretch, but like, I just, you know, if she wants to hop to NXT and they're offered more money, I don't know that I'd fight it too much. That's just where I am with her, you know. What else did I think about these shows? I already mentioned the matches I thought great. This week was strong, last week not so much. I thought Mike Bailey, Mark Davis had a nice little match last week, and I thought the six-man tag was pretty good. I can't believe we're still trying with Jack Perry. That's another guy that I don't think is, like, I think he's shown to be like mid-card good. Oh, the pre-tape with him and Luchasaurus I thought was pretty cringe. That should be specifically buried off of the previous week's show. I think that's all I got really in general. Anything you want to add to those shows? Any notes off of for the off-air stuff from Minneapolis, St. Paul?
The big off-air stuff was mainly just the Brody King run-in. They had some local talent work the ROH match. But I will say, there's a girl in the first ROH match. It was Julia Hart and Sky Blue, which Sky Blue has gotten in really good shape, by the way. She is in it. In much better athletic shape. I'll give her credit. They were facing two local talents. I didn't get their names because I don't think they were announced. But it was a lighter skin girl and an African American girl. African American girl might have something. They gave them a good amount of time. It was probably like 10 minutes for just an ROH tape match. They gave her a lot specifically. So obviously you want to give Julia Hart some shine because it's Minnesota. But that might be noteworthy. So that might be worth seeking out and seeing if there's something. Because live, from my perspective, it looked like there might be.
I've seen if I could rapidly pull who that was. Is this the right one? Nah, it's not listed here. You got to see Son of Sting wrestle.
Yeah, he was...
against Fred Rosser.
That was Fred Rosser?
No, that was the week before. I apologize. I got the wrong one pulled up here.
Yeah. I couldn't tell who it was. At first, I thought it was Arya Daivari, but then I saw a Mexico flag. In
oh, it was Rosario Grillo, who is fairly regular.
Okay. Yeah. I think Stephen Borden is very raw, but there is an understanding of little things with the business that you can already tell he's got. Mm-hmm. He's got a great look. He's athletic. I think he needs to put on maybe about 15 pounds of muscle to really fill out a little more. But I don't know. I think there's real potential in him. Now, is it more than like upper mid-carder kind of potential? I don't know that yet.
But it'd still be pretty good.
Yeah, and he was a SEC tight end. So, you know, he's got some kind of athleticism.
Yeah.
It's worth continuing to try and develop. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But right now, he's just doing all right stuff.
And he's also way early in his career. So, lots to be found there. I believe the wrestler you're trying to put over was Mina Belmont.
Okay.
If cage matches to be believed.
Worth checking out. I'm not going to tell you it was more than a 3-star match, but they really gave that one girl time in the ring, and I thought that was pretty noteworthy.
Do you realize you watched Daisuke Sasaki wrestle?
Yeah.
Of DDT fame?
Yeah.
One of those?
Daisuke Sasaki? And then the other guy's name is Paul Virk.
Yeah.
He's won some local titles around here. He's been around a while.
He looks like a local.
He's got the Dominic Mysterio haircut, and it's really bad.
What a weird... I can't believe Daisuke Sasaki was there. Just like, oh, let's wrestle a dark match. You're 40 years old. I don't know. That's weird. Interesting. Anyway.
It was weird, but whatever. It was a fun show. I would go again.
Cool. Anything else you want to add for this week's show?
No, I think Dynamite and AEW as a whole is on a really good trajectory. I'm very excited about kind of the future of what this company is, but nothing else really.
All right. Well, I reckon we can wrap it up here. Thanks everyone for joining us as my cat climbs up a stack of stuff to stare upon me as we finish the show. Hope you're all doing well. Thanks for listening. We will be back hopefully next week, or else my internet will quit once more. Then I will think my wife is angry at me. Take care, everyone. Have a great week.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.